Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
Good afternoon, and thanks so much for tuning in to Nation Radio. Over the next 2 hours, we have a very interesting show for you. You're going to look at World Juniors prospects, tonight's Battle of Alberta, and that crazy transaction yesterday that Toronto Maple Leafs fans feel is going to change the world for them. This means championships are coming post-haste. So we'll try to poke a hole in that and do our absolute best to update you on exactly what's going on with Oilers and Flames and Leafs and the other Canadian NHL teams. Last night, Oilers had a Jekyll and Hyde week with a poor showing against Carolina, followed by a wonderful effort last night against Colorado. Everything rhymed last night. Removing Sam Gagner to the RNH Eberle line to the third line, I thought Belanger, Eager, and Jones did a lot of heavy-duty work last night. Got a goal and looked, really, really strong in their game. The Smith-Horkoff-Hemsky line was in and out, but they faced that O'Reilly-Landeskog line, who have been doing a lot of very good work on their end for the Avalanche as well. Notice Ryan Whitney is coming along slowly, but you know what? Remember a few weeks ago we talked to Jeff Crichel on Nation Radio about athletes and how they return from injury and what a process it is? And it seems like there's a lot of tentative play there from Whitney. It also seems like he doesn't have his foot speed yet. So that's going to be a process, much like what we saw with Sam Gagner, and a very important part of the Edmonton Oilers because Ryan Whitney is a big part of the club. So hopefully he'll get his timing back over the next few weeks, and that's something to look for tonight. Again, with the second of back-to-back games. Jordan Eberle leads the league in 5x5 points per 60 minutes. That measurement is available at Gabe Desjardins Behind the Net and is worth a visit. Great sight, great stat, and he is smoking at even strength this year. He's also tied for 8th in overall scoring. Nugent Hopkins is 5th. He's in a 5th-place tie in total points for the season, tied for 2nd in power play points. That's ridiculous for a rookie. Outstanding. He was double-shifted. We'll talk about that today, too, by Tom Rennie. He was double-shifted 1st and 2nd power play last night and looked dangerous all night long. Nikolai Habibulin tied for 4th in save percentage at .932. And with Devan Dubnyk struggling a little bit, it's good to see and probably necessary for the Oilers, likely to start him. We'll find out a little bit later on if Habibulin will start or Dubnyk tonight, but this might be the first in a while of back-to-backs for Nikolai Habibulin. Interesting on the broadcast last night, if you were watching TSN, Ray Ferraro mentioned that he thought the Oilers might want to consider keeping Gagner among the top 6 forwards when Taylor Hall returns. He said that Alish Hemsky's play was so sluggish during the last couple of games that the third line might be an option for 83, which, you know, when you think about it, since he came up, and that's a decade now, Alish Hemsky has always been, even as a rookie, he was playing with skilled guys, maybe not the kind of minutes that he sees now. But that to me is a sign of two things. Number one, Hemsky in a contract year and coming off injury, he really wants to be in a better place than he is right now. So one imagines he'll play a lot harder. And it also goes to speaks to the depth that the Oilers have now up front with all those high draft picks, RNH and Hall, obviously, but Jordan Eberle coming through. Sam Gagner was a 6th overall pick. A lot of talent there. And for them to even consider Alish Hemsky, and I'm not suggesting the Oilers are, but just kind of riffing off the Ferraro comment, that's an interesting insight. And I thought, he's a former NHL player, very insightful guy. Miss him on the Rogers broadcast. And a guy who I thought came up with a very interesting point. Maybe that's an option. Maybe the Oilers can go 3 scoring lines deep. When was the last time they had that kind of depth? It's been a while. One of the things that I think the Oilers could do is cobble together once Hall comes back, and then with Omar, if they could come up with 3 scoring lines and then what we always used to call an energy line, 4th line, which, you know, Ben Eager, maybe Pajarvi, something along those lines. But if Belanger is a key player, I think, because he's got enough skill to score 40 points in the National Hockey League. He's done it, you know, fairly consistently. So if they have 3 centers in RNH, Horkoff, and Belanger, along with the wings, which might be Hall, Eberle, Hemsky, Smith, and then Gagner with Pajarvi, Omar, Kartikainen, whoever you want to throw in there. Do they have that kind of depth? Is that something we can see in the second half of the year? Don't know, but it's interesting, and it certainly would free up one of those lines to play against very soft opposition over the next, 35 to 40 games as the season continues. Arnage placed on both power play units last night. That's incredible for a rookie. It looked dangerous all night long, and I wanted to draw your attention today to an article Terry Jones wrote in the Edmonton Sun. You can go online and just check it out because he wrote some really nice information. He's been calling, Terry has, for Nugent Hopkins to play more minutes. And certainly he got that kind of playing time last night. In fact, in the first and second period, he was playing heavy minutes, and then they backed off a little bit in the third period with the game out of reach and maybe saving a little bit of energy for tonight's game. So it was a very interesting game. It was very frustrating to be an Oilers fan this week because of the Carolina effort and the games that have been lost recently, either in overtime or in regulation time. And you can see the team just kind of sliding back in the standings. Last night seemed to be a real statement. The kids played very well. Hobby Bullen was good. The defense was good enough. And it was interesting. As a matter of fact, Tom Rennie had some very interesting comments after the game, and let's hear those.
Well, after the last couple games, I guess we could have a big improvement.
Yeah, it was a good improvement. Better effort and, just some more commitment, bigger commitment to the little things that we have to do to manage our way through a game.
Did you get any complaints from Nuge on his 6.5 minutes of power play time?
No.
Can you talk about...
He was good with that.
Can you talk about using the remote?
Well, the big thing is, trying to take advantage of a, pretty talented kid and give both units the opportunity to move pucks through him and see if we can find some success with two units clicking. And certainly we've had one going, and it seems to be his. The big thing was making sure that we didn't, spend him too much. We are playing back-to-back here, and he's fine.
Look at Sam's first goal. Is that just kind of a perfect example of the things he's been doing? Goals haven't necessarily been going in.
I think that's right on. I think that he's been willing to muck it up and put in the second and third effort. And as a team, I think one of the reasons we've struggled here the last little while anyway is that we've been okay with the first effort. But you can't be a first effort team. You got to be a second and third effort team. And Sam's been that one guy, or at least one of a few anyway, that's willing to put in that second and third effort when things don't, aren't as crisp and clean as you want. And that's how you make the difference in a hockey game.
Ben Ager seemed charged up again to be on the third line. It looked like your biggest challenge, at least in the first 2 periods, was finding ice time for him with the power play situation.
Right, exactly, and yet he stayed locked in, which was important. Sometimes you can kind of get distracted by that and lose your grasp of the game, anyway. And certainly he didn't, and I think he felt he knew that I was coming to him, and that's a good feeling for a player. Of course, it's all about confidence and having the trust of the guy behind you.
How significant an evening is this in Nugent Hopkins' career for you, heading that direction with ice time and power play?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I'd like not to have to play him on both units, quite honestly. But he's a pretty good player. I just found that out. But I'd like someone else to be able to do similar to him. But he's just so good, But we have to be smart about it too, Terry. I think we've got to be careful we don't overdo with him. We are again playing back to back, for example. We might have to find another way to go about our business tomorrow night with another unit, but. One thing we do know is it works.
So can you just talk about maybe regardless of who you put with Nugent Hopkins and Everly, it just seems to work out. All play well with Smith, got you tonight.
I think that's fair. I'm not sure how to answer that exactly because I haven't played everybody yet, but they seem to have success. There's no question about that. I think that one of the things what I'm thinking about is just to be cautious because as maybe they get out against heavier lines, lines that maybe try to intimidate them out of a game or whatever, that, the other winger might look a little different. They might not even be together. Who knows? It's fun to embrace all of this and feel really good about those two in combination with whomever and maybe a trio. You saw another good combination tonight, we just have to wait and see and manufacture wins by trying to allow our players to be familiar with each other, but at the same time, do the right thing to protect the line or protect kids or get wins in different ways.
Tom, could you comment a little bit on Nick's performance himself when he had to be tonight, and maybe we
would you consider starting him again tomorrow and coming right back to him?
I'll start with the latter. I will consider it, but I'm going to have a conversation with him, obviously, and see how he's feeling and what he thinks. It might take until tomorrow morning to know that, quite honestly. I thought he was good. I thought he was square. I thought he was dialed in. I didn't see a whole lot of second and third chances and scrambles and things where he really had to physically battle, to stop pucks. And that's good for him, of course, and it says something about our team. But also, we finally took advantage of a team that had played last night and went after them, too. And I don't think that they had as much mustard tonight as they might have had in, against Calgary or Vancouver, for that matter.
Do you think your players sense that a little bit? They saw a push towards the end of the second period, maybe to gain a little separation and further deflate that?
No, I don't think so. I think we're just trying to play a brand of hockey that is in keeping with what we want to be. We just had finally had enough. And as a coach, you can ask me all kinds of questions every day after losses or whatever, but you get that sense that morning when you come to the rink, you get the sense where, okay, finally, they're sick and tired of this too, and they're going to do something about it. And that's really the feeling we had this morning, that they'd had enough.
When you took that time out, did you see a sign of them doing what they've done at that stage and all these other games where they've had the leads, or were you just reminding them?
No, I was when I took the time out, we were tired. We'd spent too much time in the defensive zone and off the ice. They're pretty good in the face-off circle. And off of an icing call, we just needed to rest our guys and just get it out.
Coach, how do you avoid, I don't want to say that you need Wednesday for tonight to happen, but how do you avoid that happening again in order to get back to this?
Yeah, well, I think we've got something to build on tonight now. We've got a more recent reference point other than our first 14 games finally. So now we can kind of look at tonight as a semblance at least of what we're capable of. And we have to demand that out of each other, that's how we come to the rink tomorrow to play Calgary. And, we've got to try to suppress these teams that are at least below us, as tight as it might be still. Every time you have that opportunity, you got to try to push teams down, that should serve as motivation, because there is a playoff spot at stake here, and we want to make sure that we're in the running for that. Okay, you're welcome.
It's Tom Rennie from last night's media scrum, just talking a little bit about the Oilers and how well they played last night, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins obviously having a huge impact on the power play, and as a matter of fact, he's tied for second in power play points so far this year in the entire National Hockey League. It's an interesting thing, because after 30 games, that's the game number 30 tonight, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is probably the best rookie the Oilers have seen. I'm going to say Jason Arnott, who had a big rookie year. Yari Curry had a big one as well. But this might be, I think the record is Yari Curry at 73 points for the Edmonton Oilers. And for this kid to be at 32 points after 30 games, if he stays healthy, the Edmonton Oilers record book is pretty darn difficult to rewrite. And it looks like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins might, do some things right out of the chute that have never been done before in the history of the franchise. And when you're talking about the Edmonton Oilers, that's a pretty impressive history. So interesting stuff there from Tom Rennie. Interesting guest today, too. We got Ryan Lambert from Two Line Pass. Ryan will join us to talk about, he sort of made some news this week in regard to Alexander Ovechkin and something that he heard and then wrote and then did a few radio hits with, and some interesting things there. Also Sidney Crosby and the Calgary Flames. We'll talk to Ryan a little bit later on. Danny Gray from Leafs Nation will break down the sale of the Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment and how that will impact television in this country, not maybe in the next couple of years, but moving forward. And we'll have Kent Wilson from Flames Nation as well. We'll break down the Battle of Alberta. I'm pleased to be joined right now by a gentleman who we last had on a few weeks ago, talking about the Oilers and their draft. And of course, we had him on as part of the draft coverage as well. Welcome to the studio, Matt Bug.
Thanks a lot, Alan.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Today? Now, you're on Dauber Hockey. Where else can people read you?
I'm also a Western Hockey League scout for McKean's Hockey.
Okay.
They recently released their December rankings.
Okay, so we'll look forward to that, too, because there's a few questions I have. We're going to go all over the place, and I hope you don't mind, but there's a few people who have texted questions and emailed in questions. One from Cameron. He said, Galchenyuk was talked about as a likely top five pick in next year's entry draft until he suffered a knee injury. What are the chances that he slips down to Oiler country, which we perceive to be 10 to 15, somewhere in there?
I think there's an excellent chance that Galchenyuk slips. Whenever you consider a knee injury like that, you have to also factor in rehab there. So this is a player that may not necessarily be ready for when even camp opens in the fall. Having said that, Galchenyuk's strength was his hockey sense and his smarts. He's not a player that really benefited from having strong skating or poor skating one way or the other.
Right.
And you know, it comes down to rehab time for a player like that, but I think he'd be a safe pick anywhere in that 8 to 15 range.
From somebody who I usually start following the draft now as we head into the World Juniors, my perception of the draft in the summertime and leading into the fall for 2012 was there's a couple of high-end Russians and then a bunch of CHL defensemen, and that was about it. Now, can you fill in the blanks? Is that basically what it looks like still?
And that's basically what it looks like now. It has changed slightly because of all the injuries to the class all the way across the board. It's one of the oddest years I've ever seen that way. We're seeing high picks, mid picks, low picks. They're all either out for the season, out for months, out for weeks at a time. It's really rough. But as you say, there are two Russians at the top of the class, Neil Yakupov and Mikhail Grigorenko. A Swede has emerged, Philippe Forsberg. He's compared to Gabriel Landeskog. A couple scouts outside of McKean's have compared him to Brendan Shanahan. And all the way down from there is defensemen coming from the WHL, from the OHL, even a couple Quebec League defensemen and Junior A.
Let's talk about some of the WHL defensemen, because we're somewhat familiar because of the Griffin Reinhardt plays for the Oil Kings, and we don't see the kids out you know, farther out west, but we hear about them a lot. Mm-hmm. How do they stack up? I know I've been following a little bit some of the online stuff from Craig Button and some others. So how do you break them down? Because you've got some good defensive defensemen. Reinhardt would basically fit that. Then you've got Dumba down the road, who's, you know, this guy's a freak of nature. So,
yeah, riverboat gambler.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So how would you break those down for somebody who's just kind of getting into this year as far as the draft is concerned?
Well, as you pointed out off the top, Griffin Reinhardt, 6'4", 208 pounds. The kid is a physical beast. He's got 5 points in his last three games. He's a notorious slow starter, but lately has been a really key piece, as Oil Kings fans will know. Then you go to Ryan Murray, who's just got into his first action last night. He had an assist and was a minus one. He was coming off a sprained ankle. He had about a month and a half off from that. They were really careful with that. They wanted to make sure that he was okay. Morgan Riley was ranked number 5 by McKean's heading into this month. He's done for the year with a knee injury. A great offensive defenseman. He had 18 points through 17 games. Probably was going to lead all dub defensemen in scoring. Derek Pouliot, who's sort of that middle-of-the-road player. He was a former high Bantam draft pick. He's now 4 points shy of his entire output for last season. He's got 8 points in his last six. He's a two-way defenseman, a real good skater, really smart player. And then, as you point out, Matt Dumba, who is, he's so fun to watch. I don't know how much fun I'd have coaching him, but
right.
He is a tremendous, tremendous talent. There's no doubt about that.
Is he the kind of guy who you could see, and we don't, it doesn't happen so much anymore because these kids are scouted so heavily and coached in a certain way, but is he a guy who might end up being more of a forward type, or has he definitely got the defensive, you know, chops to be able to play at a higher level?
He does have the chops when he does want to use them. I know that that's a direction that Red Deer has really pushed him in this year, learning how to use his reach and using his speed and using his hockey sense to really break down plays. But when you watch him play, it's hard not to compare him to someone like PK Subban, who I think is a perfect example of his game. He pinches up, he rushes the puck, and he's got better hands than a lot of forwards in this class.
Is he, because Subban is a, like, you know, you said beast about Reinhardt. Subban is a, like, he's not only highly skilled and great, great stick, but he also has, you know, he's a physical player. He's kind of, you know, I mean, I know he's PO'd a lot of Bruins, and that's, you know, that's a good thing for Montreal fans. Obviously, he's already a folk hero in Montreal. Dumba doesn't have that kind of physical style.
Again, he's the type, when he wants to make an impact that way, he will.
Okay.
I remember watching a hit of his from, I want to say it was the TELUS Championship or one of the minor league championships, where he just throttled a guy, and that set the tone for the game right off the top. He's got 37 penalty minutes this season, a lot of them coming honestly. You never really know which Matt Dumba you're going to get on any given night. You're going to get this freight train player who wants the puck, who wants to score, who wants to make a difference, and that he can make a difference in so many different ways, regardless of how he does it, I think is going to be a huge, huge draw for teams.
Okay. So if we're looking at the group that you've just talked about, those are the high-end guys, and we sort of were, anybody who follows the draft, familiar with most of those names.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's coming up now as a dark horse, who maybe we weren't aware of as the fall began, but is really starting to have an impact?
Well, Slater Kukuk for the Peterborough Petes in the Ontario Hockey League is starting to come on. He's got a dislocated shoulder, so he's out for an undetermined amount of time at this point. It might even be this season, but they're watching him very closely. But he's been their best defenseman, so again, they really want to make sure that, A, is can he come back and can he make an impact if he does come back? He's a very strong two-way defenseman, was easily the team's best player, as I said. And the injury is going to affect his draft stock, but that's a player who, if a team feels they've seen him enough and knows enough about him mm-hmm. would make a really solid top 15 choice.
Okay. How many draft eligibles will we see at the World Juniors from the list that you've talked about?
From the list that we've talked about, we'll probably see Matt Dumba in sort of an extra player role. I know that Team Canada is really stressing this year breaking in younger kids so that they have that consistency in future seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Murray is a possibility, depending on whether or not he's physically capable come camp time, whether or not his conditioning is back on track. For other countries, it's going to be very interesting World Juniors that way. I know that Sweden is going to be breaking in some younger forwards, which they don't typically do, but they're going to have to this year if they want to contend.
Okay. And this is sort of off the topic, and just to finish up, any Oiler prospects who, and I'm thinking about Gernad because I saw him the other night before he got injured, and he was far more physical than I thought. Actually, he made a dirty hit, but it was a very physical hit, and he got a penalty for it. But he's lanky. I knew that. I knew he was skilled, but there's a little bit of a physical specimen there too.
There sure is, and that's something that he's starting to come into as he adds pounds to his frame at this point. He was rail thin, as you know, coming into this season.
Yeah.
And he's starting to figure out that he can make a difference that way, too. He knew right off the top, very early on in the season, that he could score from anywhere that he was. And he's got such a terrific release for a defenseman. But, yeah, he's starting to become sort of that complete package, and it's looking like a real home run shot.
Beautiful. Any other Oilers out there that have made news or impact or that you've followed or read about that are improving year to year?
Well, Frans Tuohima in Finland is really making a big difference for his SM Liiga team. He's really emerged as one of the better starting goaltenders in Finland, and that's another great choice. He was a later pick. He's 20 years old right now. Not as big as a lot of Finnish goaltenders that you see break in, but his positioning is just faultless.
Perfect. Okay, so that's interesting because the Oilers, over a period of years, have drafted a lot of goaltenders. Dubnyk, the most famous because he was a first-round pick, but with Frédéric Chabot being such a part of that now, that's really had to, it just seems to me as though the Oilers have a plan. So it's nice to see some results.
Well, and you talk about that, and a lot of goaltenders that you see get drafted are very toolsy. They're very projectable. Samu Perhonen is an example of that, being a 6'3", 195-pound goaltender. And his positioning isn't great right now. They're starting to coach him into sort of the mold, and he's really helped with that. But you also have to look the other way at kids that you know can play a structured game at this point and just need a little more physical development.
Right, okay. Matt, thanks for this. Appreciate it. Where can people read you again?
They can read me on dobberhockey.com. I just had an article this past week on a dark horse Swede named Max Lander,
mm-hmm.
and also on McKean's Hockey, which just released their December rankings for the 2012 draft.
And your Twitter is?
Matt Bug.
Matt Bug.
Mm-hmm.
Easy to remember. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Alan.
That's Matt Bug, of course, from Dobber Hockey, and we had him by at the draft. He did some great stuff, and we'll have him on a few times here as the winter rolls along and we get ready for the 2012 draft. Now, Corey Graham will join us in hour number two, talk about Gernat and the other Oil Kings. Man, they're having a good run. Kent Wilson in hour two as well. We'll talk to Danny Gray from Leafs Nation at about quarter two or so. But up next, Ryan Lambert, and stay tuned for that. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.